What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. First show on our normal time slot that John and I have done this year. Last week, what did we do last week? No, I'm sorry. We recorded a day late last week. That's what it was. But so we're back in our normal spot. We're going to do our normal AEW and NXT stuff. We were a little light on that last week just because of the situation. And, you know, honestly, this week I was like, oh my gosh, after what was going on in DC, I was like, I don't even know if I want to watch wrestling tonight. But thankfully, both shows were enjoyable. So it's almost like, to me, I get a lot of people didn't watch pro wrestling last night. The ratings were down quite a bit, about a, I don't know, quarter, 20% or so, 25%. But to me, I was like, okay, like I've been watching all this craziness going on, all this pathetic predictability going on. And then I had wrestling. I was like, okay, like these shows are good. They were entertaining, kind of took my mind off of the deal for a little bit. So I was very happy to have both of these shows in my life on Wednesday night.
Yeah, it was a nice, distraction from all the chaos that was going on, all the ridiculousness. So, I mean, I just focused on the wrestling. I didn't worry about all the nuts over there. So I didn't. It was a nice Wednesday night for me, at least. I wasn't too trying to think too much of all the outside noise.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into all the stuff, I have a few things to promote here now. We have the Fight Game Media Network, which we're going to talk about that every once and again. So, we'll talk about, because we're going to be doing different things. So the first thing that I wanted to mention is we're going to give away 3 1-month subscriptions to the Fight Game Media Network. And those subscriptions are going to be one of each of the top three tiers. So one of the $5 tier, which is you get to hear John and I talk about Raw 97. And you also get to hear two jabronis with a wrestling podcast. And then the second tier is you could hear all 5 shows during the week, Monday through Friday. And then the last tier is where we add a few special shows here and there. My Ball So Hard podcast is going to re-debut at some point this weekend on the Patreon. But we have tons of stuff. We have a show with Jon Moxley that's in that $15 tier. That was right around Christmas. We have a Q&A with Big Dave, which was right before the new year, where he goes off on like a few different tangents. I mean, I led him that way, but it's a little bit different of a Big Dave Meltzer that you've heard. Fumi Saito does a show with Justin called Write That Down. And I think they're going to record again very soon. So some point next week, I believe, we'll have another show with Fumi and Justin. And we're going to have another. We're going to do the book club with Big Dave Meltzer, which will debut on the Patreon. It'll eventually make its way to our Blue Wire feed. But the first maybe 2 weeks or so, it'll be on the Patreon. And we're going to do that with a few different things, including the Karate Kid podcast that I'm doing with Chris DiPietro. We figured out the schedule. We're going to record the first podcast on the first Karate Kid. And then our second podcast is actually going to be on Cobra Kai season 1. I don't know if you've seen any of Cobra Kai yet, but that is a really fun show in that Karate Kid universe. And I'm actually so happy that they did Cobra Kai. I held off for a couple years watching it because I kind of wanted to watch it in, I didn't want to get YouTube red for one, but I wanted to kind of watch them in sequence of the Karate Kids and stuff. So that is a fun show. And then we're going to do 2 and then Cobra Kai season 2, then 3 Cobra Kai season 3, and then we'll do some other stuff. But Chris and I are going to do that. Those will also debut on our Patreon, make their way to the Blue Wire feed. And then eventually they will sort of just live on YouTube. So going back to the month giveaway that we're going to do, Patreon, they don't really have a great way for us to do this. So what we're going to do is whoever wants the first month on us, you will have to pay for it. You will have to, however you use Patreon, you'll have to pay for it. And then I will either PayPal or Venmo you directly the money back. So that's how we're going to do that. We will, I think the way that we're going to do it, and you'll see a tweet from me tomorrow on the Fight Game Media Twitter, is I think if you just have to like the Fight Game Media Twitter page, and you probably already do, and also like the Two Jabronis with a Wrestling Podcast Twitter feed, and then retweet our the post, and then we'll keep that open for a few days, and then I'll just randomly select and reach out to people, and then we'll take it from there. But you know, I wish I could just gift the free month and pay for it in advance and gift it, but it just doesn't work that way with Patreon. So you'll have to get it, and then I will directly send you the money as a little thank you, but also as like a hey, check this out. One other thing that we're gonna do, I don't know if it's gonna be Friday or early next week, but Jim Valley has a new t-shirt that is on Pro Wrestling Tees, and I will give it away to somebody on, and I think the only thing that I'm going to do there is I think it's just like Jim's Twitter handle, like Fumi's Twitter handle, like my Twitter handle, and maybe F4W's Twitter handle, something like that, and we'll if you hit all of those criteria, then you will be entered. So look for tweets from both the Fight Game Media Twitter page and my personal Twitter page at Rohiblius. And I will do some fun stuff. I plan to do giveaways and such pretty much. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know about all year, but I'm definitely wanting to do that. Because, you know, this is kind of a fun thing to do. And also, you know, money's tight for folks. And, you know, if I can create some fun contests and giveaways for people that kind of, you know, make this year go faster until we get out of this pandemic. That's kind of what I am interested in doing. So, all right. So did I get through everything? I think I got through everything. So I guess the one thing I was going to ask you about before we get into what we normally get into, which is, I know that you and Justin and JD talked about Wrestle Kingdom night one mm-hmm. on High Tension. Are you guys coming back to talk about night two on High Tension? Do you know?
Sure. We'll touch about it on the next show for sure. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
So obviously
Justin did his own on the Patreon special review of night two.
He actually put reviews, like they're like 25, 30 minute reviews that we added to the Patreon of his own. Like he just stayed up and watched them and did them. But I know your sort of your deeper analysis of those shows will be on High Tension. But overall, what did you think of both nights?
Yeah. You know, I liked both shows kind of equally. They both had their positives and no real major negatives. I mean, there's some matches I think are kind of overrated by a lot of people. But my favorite match is I liked the main event of night one. I liked Jeff Cobb and Shingo Takagi. It was awesome. I mean, both guys just brought it. Really opened up that night too. I really thought once that match happened, and I loved the main event of night two. Jay White and Kota Ibushi was a really throwback match, slow paced. Jay White's a tremendous worker. So is Kota, but Jay White it's just a great heel, you know, and he gets it, and he does stuff that even people, like some old stuff that people are not even doing anymore. And like, he wants to be a heel. He's trying to get heat. He's not trying to just go out there and, you know, do some flashy stuff. Cause that's not his role. His role is to be the heel. And, you know, I thought it was really good. I really liked that match. The main event was really, really solid.
You made a comment. I don't remember exactly where you made it, but you said that when it came to Okada and Ospreay, you were a little disappointed that Ospreay wrestles pretty much the same way as a heel as he wrestles as a babyface. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to explain that.
Yeah. I mean, he just wrestles the same way. I know you said like he turned up the aggression a little bit. I didn't really see that. I mean, attempting to power drive Okada on the mat or on the hardwood floor, I guess, so you remove the mat.
Well, we put him through the table.
Yeah, but that's not a heel. That's just a stunt. Which, by the way, took forever to set up. Like, Red Shoes doesn't even count. Like, he doesn't even start counting. It's just like he lets him do it, then he starts counting to get the 20 count. It's like, I hate when matches bend the rules of wrestling so they can get a spot in. Like, they should have done it within the 20 count. And then, you know, it was kind of ridiculous. It was crazy, you know, looking and the way they set it up. And I thought he was going to go over to the floor and expect him to turn into the table, which I'm glad he did because that was safer. I just want to see Ospreay do some more healing stuff. Just a little more cheating, a little more stuff with Bea Priestley. Use her. She's out there just around, like, you know, have her trip up Okada, have her distract a ref. You know, have, you know, just do stuff like that. Like, you know, a little choking a little bit, just a little more aggressive that way. Like, and he can still pull out the high flying stuff because, you know, like, to me, for him to get heat, because he's still going to do the flying and everything, but because people know he's talented and he can compete with Okada, and he has competed with Okada, you know, toe-to-toe before, but now he's taking shortcuts when he doesn't have to, but he is. I think he'll just get more heat out of the deal. So to me, it was just like one of the regular matches, maybe a little bit different when it comes to, like, you know, a little more bigger spots or bigger stunts, but, you know, it was... I mean, still, it's a good match, though. I mean, I liked it. I didn't hate on it. You know, Okada is amazing. His timing and everything at the end, his whole finishing sequence thing is really good. You know, I love the Rainmaker, seeing that. It was awesome. But
what did you think of both members of the Empire? Is that what
all three members lost?
Yeah, they all lost, and then. Yeah. Which was kind of interesting, but I guess they won together at Dash, I think, right?
Yeah, they won a six man tag against Tenkoji and one of the young boys, I forget his name, but I heard that match was pretty good. I haven't seen it yet. I was a little shocked that at least one of the members didn't win. I mean, I didn't expect Great Okan to win. You know, it's the Tokyo Dome. Tanahashi on the mid card, but he's not, you know, you gotta get the fans the big Tanahashi win, you know. I thought maybe Ospreay would have snuck out a victory over Kata.
The easiest one to me was Cobb.
Yeah, I was shocked by that too. Well, once those two lost night one, I was like, okay, well, they gotta do something with Cobb because The Empire, they just got formed like 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
Right. So
are they the United Empire now? Did they change their name or something?
I don't even know. I didn't see New Year's Dash.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
But you know, they won. So maybe for the new year, you know, they're going to, you know, push them as a serious group. And, you know, I guess the big angle from New Year's Dash was that Jay White walked out or something like that. Or
yeah, he did an interview and.
And just went crazy.
And then I think he lost to Ishii
on News Dash.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So yeah, he'll take some time off and he'll come back probably new look, a little bit of a new look, and we'll see what happens. So if I was him, I would try to take off to what, the cup, maybe come back for the cup or after the cup or something like that. Or
I think Japan is like. They could possibly shut down again, so they may not have shows if that happens. I think I don't know what the latest is on that,
mm-hmm.
but you know there is that chance. I remember last week when Big Dave and I were interviewing Kevin Kelly, and I was just like, "What's going on with this story?" You know, they're not allowing, you know, they're stopping gatherings at a certain amount. And he was just like, you know, that doesn't really have to do with us. But in the back of my mind, I'm going like, oh, man, if it gets worse,
mm-hmm.
like, because he flew out there and he quarantined. So he misses Christmas, I think. So I think because he had to quarantine, he had to fly to Japan and then quarantine in a hotel for 2 weeks prior to.
Yeah.
Prior to the event. So that's what he was doing up until the two night or the three nights. And so, he, you know, that's quite a sacrifice, right? Like he just to do that show. And then if they shut it down, then what does he do? Does he have to stay there? Like, I guess they would be, probably would be able to leave, but you know,
he'd probably be able to leave, but yeah, he's had to try to like record here or something like that. They're going to do English broadcasts, and
I'm going to try to actually get him on this show, because he was he had a lot of fun with some of like my broadcasting questions that I asked him, so he may be interested in having more of a conversation about broadcasting and kind of his career. Mm-hmm. So I may try to do that, so not promising, but crossing fingers that I'll be able to interview Kevin for this show at some point.
Yeah, but overall I like the show. I like I thought both shows were good and set a nice, you know, start to the new year. And I wasn't really big on the junior title matches this year. I didn't like, wasn't into Hiromu and ELP.
There's your heel.
I know, but I feel like he's acting like a heel, but not a heel.
I don't know. He kind of seems like a dick. Like whenever I see
him. I don't know. I just don't believe it from him for some reason. And then Hiromu and Ishimori, I felt like there is anyone going to try to win this match. Like there is like some moves they would do and not even cover a guy, like some big move. It's not like they're selling like, oh man, I can't get make a cover. You know, it was like, he would just do a move and then he'd be, you know, they'd be sitting there for a while. And like, and then my favorite spot, well, not favorite, cause I liked it, cause I thought it was so stupid, was when Ishimori does a springboard 450 to the arm. Mm-hmm. Right, I'm like, why would he just 450 the guy and go for the cover? You know what I mean? I know he has a submission hold, you know, but still, like, why would you do the effort of doing a 450 when you're just gonna go for the arm? I would just go for the you know, the body, take the air out of the guy and try to pin him.
It's not his finisher, man. He's not gonna pin him with that move.
But he could easily just kick the arm on the rope or drop a knee on it. Like, why take this big bump for really nothing? You know, it was just stupid. It was just ridiculous. You know, people, like I said, people are gonna probably overrate that match, but it just didn't make any damn sense. You know, so yeah, I don't like matches.
I have a hard time watching Hiromu's matches.
Why? Because it takes so many chances?
Yeah, because we saw him get legitimately hurt in San Francisco.
And he's still doing
right there.
He's still doing crazy stuff, you know? And then he still does that power bomb, like, to the floor. Like, he does that, you know, sunset flip power bomb on the floor. But it's so, like, both nights it was really mistimed. Like, he hits it, falls on his butt, and ELP just falls backwards. It was just, like, really bad mistimed. I don't know. Maybe they just have a bad night for me. But we just watched, for High Tension, we watched the 96 Tokyo Dome. And they had Jushin Liger and Koji Kanemoto opener, which was a lot of moves. But, like, each move, like, big move meant something, and there's covers, and there's kickouts, and it wasn't, like, this stupid old shock. Oh, my God, he can't be kicked out. It was, like, more frustration, and, you know, Koji Kanemoto had, like, really unload everything he had in his arsenal to really try to pin Liger, and he couldn't do it. It was just really, really well done. I guess maybe I just saw that, and when I saw
those... Have you ever seen that match before?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, long time. I mean, it's been a while since I watched that whole Tokyo Dome, so it was like rewatching it. It's just like you know, doing 97 Raw again, right? Like, you kind of forget these matches. So, but yeah, it was. But overall, man, I was so happy for Jeff Cobb. Like his first Tokyo Dome singles match, and those guys brought it. I know he loves working Shingo, you know, and they have such great chemistry. And I knew the finish right away. Not right away, the match started, but right when Shingo took out his knee, I knew exactly what was going to happen. It was going to be Tour of the Islands. He's going to hit it, but be unable to cover him because his knee's been injured. And then, you know, I'm glad that there wasn't a kick out, that Shingo just got his foot on the ropes. I thought that was great. So they still protected there. But yeah, I just, God, it was so good. And like, both guys are just bringing it. And Jeff had like an extra pep in his step, you know. I mean, he always brings, he always works hard, but like, you could tell, like, he's just super jacked for this match, as he should be. And he's just like, he was on everything. I couldn't see anything wrong with it. You know, I think
they're going to get 5 stars.
I'm really honest with him, you know, when I talked about his matches, and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't really find any fault, you know. So, but yeah, it was really good. I was so happy for him because it's, you know, it's a big, that's a, you know, to come to have a great match on the Tokyo Dome is, you know, it's big, you know, for him and that company. So hope he does well in the G1 this year. And I hope, you know, I hope that's the case. And
is it me or is he in such good shape that his singlet was like, it's just like the tiniest bit baggy on him.
I don't know. I mean, look, his shoulders look nuts. Like he has those like big old 45 plate shoulders and those traps. I mean, he just looks like he looked crazy. And he came out like with that, just that mean mug look. He's like, mm-hmm. he's like just, oh my God, he's going to tear someone apart. You know, he's really come together with this, this heel persona.
All right. So, we're going to take a quick break. Come back and talk about these shows. I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. On top of that, we'll get you, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is that you can get all of this for just $15 a month. It's the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find more. I will link it in there. And that is bwhustle.com/join. I will say, my other podcast, Thompson to Clark, we are a part of the Hustle program. So if you have any questions about that too, you can also hit me up, gg@fightgamemedia.com. All right, let's talk about AEW and NXT. It was a night where NXT had a sort of a TakeOver Junior-ish card. The one match had to be taken off the card. They didn't do it. It was Thatcher, the Thatcher match, which I think because of that stipulation, they haven't burned out that match yet. So I think a lot of people were looking forward to that one. But it sounds like Thatcher was hurt or something and they had to cancel that one or postpone it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. In a way, it kind of works out in their favor because now they have a big match on a future episode, which I'm guessing will be in a few weeks. So it won't be too long. Sound like whatever it was is probably minor and they're just being precautionary. But I was a little bummed about that, too. But, you know, hey, you know, or maybe it just took too long to put that damn cage up. The timing of it wasn't going to work out for them. So they, you know, they probably decided to say, hey, let's just scrap it and do it for a. Do it for their date, like, which is not a bad thing for them because it gives them a really big match on a future show.
So let's talk about AEW first. I thought on paper NXT, I thought had the better show on paper. It was built up like a takeover, which is you know, with the exception of like one of the recent ones where they kind of put all the matches together really late because they had to deal with certain injuries and stuff. But I thought this show was built up pretty darn well. If I had a negative about the build up to the NXT, it's just all of the you know, last woman standing, and then we're gonna have that other match in the pit or whatever. Like, I sometimes feel like those matches, those stipulations, or, you know, they make the match feel bigger, but I almost don't want to see the stipulation. I just want to see the match. So sometimes, and we'll talk about it when we get to the dislikes. I didn't dislike the Ripley match in any way. I really liked that match, but just the idea of how they you know, because I want to say Edge and Randy Orton was last man standing at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that match wasn't as good as this match at all. Like, this match was so much better. But when I started to watch this match, I was just like, feels like we've seen a Last Man Standing match not that long ago. And then I sort of Googled it and I was like, oh yeah, this stupid Edge Randy Orton match that I did not like at all. But they made it work. I just really wish that they would hold off on some of these stipulations, because they have three shows and they have stipulation matches on every show. And Raw has how many stipulation pay-per-views?
Yep.
And it's just like, you know, I just feel like there's too much of this stuff. And when you have three shows, and I'm not watching Raw and SmackDown, I am watching the pay-per-views, but it just feels like I've seen something similar before. And I don't like that, because it just feels like, oh man, there's just running through stuff. But that
nature of the beast of modern wrestling, right? With all these shows and everything. And but Rhea Ripley and Raquel Gonzalez definitely needed some kind of stip, because you know what was going on leading up to it, for sure.
But like, they wrestled in War Games and that was brutal, and they've done so much brutal stuff. And I get the reason to do Last Woman Standing, but also the reason to do Last Woman Standing is so that Rhea didn't have to get pinned to lose. I get that part as well, but I don't know. It's just like stipulations have just become, and so what you said is it's both shows. It's not just, both brands. It's not just WWE, but because of that, it almost seems like we see a stipulation match like every other week.
Oh yeah. With all wrestling, right? That's the way it is. There's this cage match on SmackDown a couple weeks ago with Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. And, you know, like, it's been like that for God knows how long now. It's like, you know, we're going to have a cage match.
Well, when it was Raw and SmackDown, and maybe people were watching Impact, okay, like, you could hold that stuff off. And maybe do one, you know, there would be like one big cage match on Raw. Like, you would get one cage match a year on Raw, and that was fine. And then, you know, as you add these shows, as you add NXT, as you add AEW, and we're going to get another hour of AEW at some point this year, I'm just like, let's go a little bit slower with these stipulations, because I just feel like we're getting killed over the head with these stipulation matches, and it feels that they are less special because of that. And I don't know what the resolution to that is, other than kind of slowing things down. But as we've talked about on TV, when you're going head to head Wednesday night, you're trying to keep audience. And I guess they've seen that the stipulation matches work in order to keep audience, in order to build and feuds. But it's just kind of a thing that hit me, where it's like, oh my gosh, we've seen so many of these. But again, that was more of a dislike of just general wrestling than that match. But I wanted to mention that before we get into this. So AEW, very interested to see what you thought about this main event. I would say the last 5 to 7 minutes of the main event, I was glued to the TV. I could give or take the beginning of this match and them kind of getting loose, but I thought the last 5 to 7 minutes was really kind of nuts not to say that it was Ibushi Naito, but I was a little afraid watching some of these moves.
Yes.
The Omega, I still find Omega really compelling. And then when he wins the match, they do the Moxley thing and Moxley comes out. So I'm kind of grouping these two things together as two likes, even though they're kind of two separate things.
I guess I should have done the same thing too as well.
So Moxley comes out and he's got the barbed wire bat and he attacks Kenny. And Don Callis takes a powder and he's getting out of Dodge. And so Moxley's taking it out on Kenny for, you know, getting the title stolen. And this is after, which was my third like. So all these three likes are sort of grouped together. Moxley does a really good promo where he says, I will live forever in your blind spot. I thought that was a great line. The one thing he did not explain was why he was gone. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they plan to explain that or they're not going to explain that. I think that was the only thing that that they missed on that promo. I thought his delivery was awesome. The whole promo was awesome. And then the Good Brothers come out and attack him, and they lay wood to him. Now, the thing that I didn't like about the end of this is I thought Moxley took an ass whooping for way too long.
Yeah.
It was just, how do you
no
sell?
No one came out to save him.
Well, I mean, the goofballs tried, right? The goofballs in the crowd. Brian Pillman with the varsity jacket and the corduroy pants.
Where's the top baby faces in the group? Where's, where's Darby, his buddy?
Darby or Sting with the bat? So what happens is that finally the Young Bucks come out and they are just kind of trying to like, what's going on? Like, you know, why are you doing this? You know, are they with Kenny? Are they not with Kenny? My one negative on this is you kind of had to be a BTE watcher to really understand the thing with the Good Brothers. There was a episode a few months back where, because supposedly the Good Brothers were going to be in the main event angle of the very first Dynamite. And then they signed their deal with WWE and they stayed with WWE. So there was a BTE segment where they kind of tried to do this funny thing where, they pretended like they recorded it like years ago. And they were all like, one of these days we're going to have our own company and, you know, we're going to be in the company together and blah, 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 blah. And so the Good Brothers filmed that for BTE. And then they felt sort of burned that they didn't come on the show. But so you cut, like, if you're wondering like a little bit why they were so cool, I think that plays into it, though. Again, I hate it when they do angles on BTE and they don't explain them. Maybe they'll explain them next week. And so the whole thing ends with everyone doing the two sweets and Moxie's still selling he's going to go on a rampage at some point. So I enjoy like that, the last 5 to 7 minutes of that match, the beatdown thing, even though it was a little bit long for my taste, but it was a really strong kind of cliffhanger thing. Cause the thing that I felt when that show finished was, oh, I kind of want to see what's going to happen next. And, you know, that's kind of the deal, right? Like that's what it was like when we were watching Raw in like 97 and 98, you're like, oh, I kind of want to see what happens next. And so when I felt that way, I was like, okay, then I think that was pretty good. I think they did a really good job with that. If, you know, I was so intrigued to see, you know, how are they going to tell the next layer to the story?
Yeah. I mean, I like the match and the post-match angle, I could have done it without the barbed wire bat at this point. I thought it'd be cool if Moxie would have really blindsided him, like out of nowhere, tackled him. Don Callis could have took the powder. They could have had a little back and forth brawl Kenny's trying to get away and he keeps getting him pounding on. And then the Good Brothers come in, you know, because we have that baseball bat. It's like, that's a pretty big equalizer with barbed wire on it. You know what I mean? Like he should be able to, even on a couple of people like coming at him, he should be able to take him out with a baseball bat or at least, you know, do a little better.
Well, the
better.
Baseball bat's the equalizer for Sting and he doesn't have to swing it.
No, he just has to come out every show. He's going to, I think he's going to do something different in July. So look forward to that.
maybe he'll be back with the bleach blonde hair for July.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Blast. But yeah. I think he'll probably sell it as chrome, but it'll be just gray, unfortunately. But, the Young Bucks come out and, you know, they're EVPs. They're trying to settle things down, right? Right? They're trying to settle Omega down. They're trying to keep the peace, I guess. And then Jim Ross, Excalibur, and Tony Schiavone are just going nuts. Like shocking, like this big shocking moment when they all do it too sweet, but like they really do anything shocking. They didn't kick Moxley. Mm-mm. They didn't do anything to Moxley. They super kicked the geeks, right? Yep. Like I guess maybe because Brian Pillman Jr.'s technically a babyface, wrestling on the babyface side. We should be shocked by that. But what I got out of it was like, well, they're friends with Kenny and cool with, from history with the Good Brothers, that they did the Too Sweet for that, right? And now I think they're going to be, we're going to go through this whole, you know what we're going to do? It's going to be Young Bucks, Adam Page, Kenny Omega part two with the Good Brother, Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, like, you know, they're, Omega's a heel with Don Callis, but Young Bucks aren't cool with Callis, but they're cool with Omega. You know, it's probably gonna be one of those. I'm guessing the same thing.
Yeah, it, the thing about it is it was subtle enough. Now, what would have been great, and I should watch this back. Matt Jackson kind of smirked. And I don't know if that was a smirk, because he was the last one to put the Too Sweet up. So I don't know if that was a smirk to just be like, oh, fine. Like, I don't want to be the guy to not do this. But I couldn't tell. Like, it, you know, it, this wasn't...
Well, he's kind of always had that, I smelt a poopy diaper smirk, right? Like, he just kind of... He just has that face. It just he's not really the best actor in wrestling history. He's probably one of the worst ever. But
what I was gonna say is, it's not Randy Savage throwing the dagger eyeballs at Hogan.
No. Different ballpark. Yeah. No, this is but I don't know. The match itself, though, I enjoyed it. Kind of expected the match. I was intrigued because I kept thinking, oh, man, I hope someone doesn't get hurt in this, right? Because there's, I mean, Omega took a lot of nasty bumps on his head and neck. I mean,
crazy.
Phoenix is always sensational flyer. You know, I really enjoy, it's just like Ospreay. You know, not my favorite wrestlers, but I can enjoy when they take it to the air because it's amazing because they're just such great athletes.
What about the full Nelson German that Phoenix took on the floor?
But did he flip over though?
I don't know. I couldn't tell.
I think he moonsaulted over. Still, it's like, you know, it's not good for your knees either. You know,
there was an awesome spot in the corner that turned into a German that I thought was really, really cool.
That's the one still, with Kenny Omega landing on his back of his neck.
Yeah, but still, high angle one. So scary.
Yeah, very scary. I mean, Jericho like mentioned it like right away, like, you know, you only got so many bumps in your bump card, you know.
So I was talking to our friend Brady, who's in our Fight Game Podcast mm-hmm. Facebook group. And he was like, because it was actually Paul Fontaine, who is also in our Fight Game Media Network. He does a podcast with Ryan Frederick called In the Clinch. He was saying how he thought Jericho was like way too inside, like trying to be young, you know, too cool for school kind of guy. And Brady, who is much younger, I think Brady's in his, I don't know, mid-20s. And he was like, nah, that stuff doesn't bother me. And I was like, interesting. It, part of it is he's a big wrestling fan. So, you know, that's not going to bother him. But he said, you know, baseball has a lot of analytics that people don't understand. And so sometimes when announcers will talk about it, it feels like they're doing the same thing. And I said, well, I agree. If baseball was fake, like if you were scrimmaging... Because Jericho used the word work a couple of times rather than fight.
Oh, I worked this guy, this guy, all that kind of stuff. Or
had a match with, he could have said had a match with, right?
Yeah, I wrestled.
I wrestled, you know, I fought.
I don't hate that. I worked with this guy. Like, we talk about that in the back or something, you know, personally. Oh, yeah, I worked that guy before. You know, he's a cool guy. But, like, Jericho... I thought he annoyed the hell out of me that his whole show. I was just like, I wish he wasn't there. I think he just took away from Jim Ross and Shivani and even Excalibur. He just kept going on, and he'd say an irritating thing here and there. But for most part, I was just like, dude, like maybe one match a show or a certain match, you know. But like even during the Jake Hager and Wardlow match, which was a waste of time, like they. He just was like, he was not like you would, he should be a little more involved in it. Not like, oh, they got to get their aggression out. You know, it's like, dude, like,
so I actually didn't mind that story because we had talked 2 weeks ago. We said this story doesn't make sense because Jericho just said they either have to stay together or break up. I liked his explanation of why they had the match, which is they need to test each other because they, once they know that they both are the real deal, they'll respect each other. It's kind of like this, you know, two dudes who need to test each other. So I liked that explanation, and actually didn't mind. I didn't mind the match. It wasn't a great match, but it was kind of cool to see two big athletic dudes, you know, fight each other. Not dissimilar from Cross and Priest as two big athletic dudes, though. So there's something wrong with Karrion Kross.
He's got
some, like, he's hurt or he's not in shape or whatever. But I you know, we've talked about this in the past. I like it when, like, two big dudes who are athletic and they just kind of go for a little bit. Look, this was not Jeff Cobb and Shingo, right? That's not what this was, but I don't mind it. And Jay, you know, we've talked about Jake Hager. This is not a pro wrestling in of itself does not seem to be the greatest fit for him. Wardlow is still very early in his career, but I thought it was one of those like things where you're like, okay, I didn't love it, but it was still kind of intriguing to me because I have a feeling, you know, at some point they're going to do it again. And Wardlow, if he actually grows in wrestling and, you know, can continue to get his reps in, there's something there with him. I don't know about his personality, but his in-ring presence is pretty cool.
I just think they wasted this match. I mean, instead of, this was done to set up MJF getting another member of the Inner Circle on his side, right? That's why it was done. But I think they could have done a different way. They could have done this 10 other different ways instead of having a match already between Jake Hager and Wardlow. They could have built this up. It could have meant something later. Now they already had the first match. So now when they have another match again, it's not going to mean as much. It won't be as exciting. You know, they should have put that carrot out there a lot longer. You know, they could have always kind of gave each other looks or just some mistrust. And there's always going to be there. But then finally something happens where they finally hook up. Not that just a little to do this match just to have that moment with Hager. Hager could have lost a tag match or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, with Jericho as his partner. And Jericho's not there to be with him. He's by himself. And, you know, and Hager could be upset like, man, you know, it wasn't just my fault out there. It wasn't my fault out there. You know, Jericho too, you know, but and kind of calm himself down. He doesn't want to say too much because he doesn't want to bury his guy, you know. The leader of the Inner Circle, and MJF is like, yeah, I totally get it. You know, yeah, you know, I'm not saying, hey, yeah, Jericho, you know, he also has some issues out there, but you know, don't worry, man. You're Jake Hager. You're undefeated MMA fighter. You're gonna get yourself back up. You know, that they could have done something like that, but save this carrot of Wardlow and Hager to really mean something. Like, it should have happened, like, you know, 4 to 5 months down the line. Maybe at the pay per view in May, they could have finally had their thing, or July, but. Not now. No, it didn't mean anything now. It would have meant something definitely, you know, in the summer for sure.
I don't know. I wonder if the idea is like, you know, we continually keep saying we're going to save it and save it and save it and save it. And if you continually book that way or if you think that way, you're never going to get there, right? Because we heard.
Well, you could get there if you have a plan, but they don't have a plan. I think Tony Khan likes to. I think he's too quick with the trigger on stuff. I think that's his.
Well, for instance, I'll give you an example. We have heard, and you know, I think Big Dave has mentioned this a few times that, you know, because we saw Jungle Boy, they were kind of pushing him, and then I think the idea was once the pandemic came, then they kind of pulled back on him a little bit because they felt that when we christen him as one of the next guys, it has to be in front of fans. Mm-hmm. And so now we know we're not getting fans for a long time. You know, I'm not talking about the 800 fans at Daly's place that are interspersed, but you know, when are we going to go back to fans? WrestleMania 22 or 2022, is that going to be the first major event? And so if you continue to think like that, and if you continue, well, we got to hold this back, you're going to be holding back stuff forever. And we still haven't seen Jungle Boy back as hot as he was when they were starting his singles build.
And that was your argument about Karrion Kross when he debuted. Remember, you're like, oh, I wish they would have held this off for when they had fans. You know, they could have held them off. And you just can't. At some point, you know, you just got to do the deal, right? You just got to, and Jungle Boy too. And, oh, man, I didn't put it on my dislikes. I probably should have put it on there. But that promo with FTR confronting Marco Stunt and Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, one thing that stood out, like, I'm not sure if Jungle Boy is even ready yet for a singles run, because his facial expression during this whole time was just like, it's almost like he's laughed, like, kind of like he's not there yet to be the main guy. He needs a lot more seasoning. You know, I still think they should continue with the Jurassic Express. I know Tony Khan bought the song and everything, and he's ready. But I think, I don't know, just like that one, when you're having Marco Stunt do the talking for you at this stage, like, that's a big sign for me. I love Jungle Boy, but I still want to see him kind of rise. I still think they should take their time with it. And I still think they should really focus on tag first with him being successful with that. They're not really successful. They're just in the middle of the road team, right? They're just a gimmick team. And, you know, they could have a nice little short run with the titles. And then something happened when he breaks off in the group. Maybe Luchasaurus finally turns on him or something happens. But that's what I would do with Jungle Boy. But that when Marco Stunt's doing the promo and Jungle Boy, he, you know, Jack Perry's just sitting there and he's just kind of like, it's like he's just not there for ready. Like, he's not showing any aggression towards FTR, who's talking so much shit. Like, he's just kind of like, okay, hey, don't worry, but you're all right. Like, after it's over, he's like, hey, Marco, hey, yeah, it's okay. Don't worry. And it's like, dude, these guys are just talking shit to you guys, calling you guys losers and calling you guys dorks and calling you guys, you know, a Tarzan boy and shit like that. Like, you got to puff your chest out and ready for a fight.
Can I take it back to Cobra Kai? Mm-hmm. The natural way that you handle bullies in that way is to just sort of like, you're trying to get out of there, right? You're trying to get out of there in a sense. So he knows that he's going to be in this tag match with, isn't it?
Marco.
Marco and
the best part is Marco. Marco is just, he's such an idiot. Like, he could be the biggest idiot. He looked like the biggest idiot because he's like, I'm taking your spot. The biggest guy on the team, he's taken out of the match. You
know? Well, but that's what I'm saying is it's like, oh shit. Now, if, you know, if you're thinking, if I'm thinking about this in a realistic way, I'm not actually happy about that. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? Like, this is the guy who is on this team for this reason, not you. And so that's my natural instinct, is to kind of be like, no, like, we can't, you know, you just lessened our odds of winning here. Mm-hmm. So I don't think his reaction was actually perfect for that either. But I do wonder if he was trying to find a different thing than your normal puff out. Because you can't out puff out the chest of Marco, right? That's just what he does. He's the, you
but
know,
you
he,
can, you can be ready to for the something to happen. Is just, he had his hands in his sweater. Like, you know, like, just two hands in his sweater, just sitting there. Like, no, like, get kind of like, okay, wait, hey, you guys coming up to us? Let's, you know, stand up a little bit, you know? And like, with just his hands in his sweater told me nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. So, man, I don't know. You watch that thing again and just look at his face. I don't think he had a clue what he was needing to do in that. I don't think he had any direction for that promo. It was, okay, Marco, you're going to do this. Marco, you're going to do that. Marco, you're going to do this. And so there's no direction given to Jungle Boy, mm-hmm. which you got to get direction to all three guys, not just one. And yeah, and that was just a stupid, I don't know. That match is going to be interesting. That match shouldn't last long, but it probably will. And I don't know, whatever. Maybe it'll be good. Who knows?
Was there anything else on your likes list before we officially move to the dislikes?
You talked about it. I like the Moxie promo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, he's always strong with the promos. I always like his promos. I always probably say that every show he's on.
Yeah. No, and, yeah, it was good. It was. I find it so interesting that, you know, when we do the podcast with him, he's a very thoughtful person when it comes to his takes, but he will sit there and he will give me a two Mississippi before he jumps in. But when he's in promo world, when he's in promo land, he's just on fire with everything. Yeah. Like, yeah. I wonder if he like has that whole thing in his brain before he spits it out. I'll have to ask him about that.
But you could tell he really thinks about these promos. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't just go out there and off the cuff, you know, but it's good though. He's also like, he's probably forms his bullet points and really dials them down and then, you know, thinks about it again and takes something out or adds something he missed. You know, I think he really is serious about his promos, and they come across on when he does them, you know. Yep. But yeah, I mean, and back to the Omega Phoenix match, and we'll talk about the O'Reilly Balor match. Mm-hmm. Like, it's totally two different styles. I prefer, you know, obviously the Balor O'Reilly style.
Yep.
But like, you know, there's fans of both, and it was kind of a cool night of two different main events, I thought, that had like two different styles, and they're both equally really good. I guess I hope that makes sense, but you know, but I say like it was like a good thing for pro wrestling. I guess I want to say
I completely agree with you, and I don't know which match. Like, so the way that I looked at it, we'll talk about NXT after we get done with AEW dislikes. But when I think about what match I was entertained most by, I think I was entertained most by the Omega thing, but when I look at what match did I like better, which match did I think was like the, which finish did I like better, I lean towards the NXT match. But like you said, they're different in good ways, and I'm glad that they weren't the same, right? We're happy that we didn't see the same thing in both matches. And so the variation worked pretty well, I thought, for both shows.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
All right, so let's get to these dislikes here. So
I got one done, so I only got three more.
So, okay. Sheeta and Abaddon.
Yes, it's on there.
So I'm watching this during the day. I didn't finish AEW last night. No. Maybe I did watch this last night. I watched the first hour of AEW kind of while I was cooking dinner and doing some stuff around the house. And then the second hour I was going to watch after dinner. I got through most of it. I think I got through the whole thing right after dinner, but the family's still in the room. We're still kind of in, you know, just had finished eating dinner, and my stepdaughter's in the room. And then I turn it on and I'm like, oh God, Abaddon and Sheeta. So I basically skipped through the whole match. I kind of like fast forward, like then I would watch for a couple seconds and fast forward, then I'd watch and fast. So I didn't really see the match. From what I did see, I'm kind of glad I fast forward through most of it and skipped through it. Not the kind of match that I was really comfortable watching around the family. So you're going to have to lay this one out for me.
Oh, you didn't watch it at all then?
No, well, I mean, I watched it, but I skipped through. I like fast forwarded it, and then I would stop and watch a little bit. Then I would fast forward because she was still in the room, and I didn't want to have to stop watching the show and then go back. So
yeah, because she's what, five, right?
Yeah,
yeah. See, I wouldn't. Chloe's five too. I don't let her watch The Fiend. You know, like I just, you know, I understand that, and I wouldn't know that I watched this match either. It was a little better than most what you get from AEW Women's matches, especially with Sheeta. I think this is the match where they could have done a disqualification and built to a rematch, the big stipulation. Like, just beating her now, Abaddon, she just debuted or whatever, you know, just started featuring her. Now she got beat by Sheeta, and like, let's, you know, that's it. What's next? You know, what's next? You know, I just, I guess next for Sheeta would be Britt Baker eventually, or maybe Thunder Rosa. But
I mean, what they could have done is they were like, okay, we're going to test this thing out. And they may have heard from the fans who are just not into the Abaddon thing. And maybe they decided like, okay, like we don't really need to extend this any longer. We have to kind of go back to the drawing board with this character before we do bring it back.
No, what they could have done is save the biting to this match, and that's when the disqualification would have happened, mm-hmm. right? Like, that could have been something like, oh, it's so shocking that, because biting is illegal, right? You're not supposed to bite in professional wrestling. So, I mean, if you're going to bite someone and take chunks of skin out and blood, I definitely, that would be cause for automatic disqualification. So they could have done that, like, you know, where Abaddon's so dominant in early part of the match because, you know, Shida can't figure it out, but then finally Shida makes that big comeback and now Abaddon's on her heels, and then finally Abaddon, you know, just desperation, just bites her and gets the disqualification, and people come in and all this craziness, and then he could probably come back with a rematch, those two, you know, like extend it out a little bit, like it just one and done, really. It's just, I'm a little more disappointed in the booking of it than the actual match itself.
All right, what else is on your list?
You talk about promos. What about that Chuck Taylor Miro promo? Like,
it was JV level stuff.
It was like indie level
stuff. I mean, another sure. inside term, right? Young boy. Like, who really yeah. knows what that stuff means?
Just their audience.
Well, I mean, okay, their audience has heard of that term. Right. If you're a wrestling fan, you've heard of that term. But unless you really follow Japanese wrestling and you really understand the culture there, you don't really know what that means.
We got to assume that most of their fans, you know, follow them from New Japan to, you know.
But it's not like Matt Jackson started as a young boy and we've heard
no,
this term
but
constantly.
They've seen the young boys in New Japan wrestle, you know, and I'm sure Kevin Kelly talked about that on his, you know, he talked about that when the young boys wrestle, and there's a big graphic on the screen that says young boys when the young boys make their entrance. So,
but I guess what is demeaning about being a young boy?
There's
based
nothing
off of that information.
Nothing,
because what Miro's trying to say is that basically this dude is bringing him coffee and mm-hmm. washing and bathing him and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, that's what he's saying, but they're not actually saying that. They're just using mm-hmm. the term young boy, and we are supposed to know what that means. I don't think a lot of that audience knows exactly what that means.
Yeah, they probably just think he's a young wrestler.
Yeah, that's what they think. Oh, yeah, you know, he got my bag. You know, I had to get his bags, you know, because that's kind of what rookies do in pro sports. You know, you get the guy's bag.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have him at a house, you know, maybe like the a version of the Jimmy Garvin Sunshine with David Von Erich angle, where they had to go to the ranch. Jimmy Garvin and Sunshine had a good, and they're, you know, they're watching the dog and all this kind of stuff. So maybe it's like a reverse version of that. Won't be as good. But Chuck Taylor's like, he's just like, what's he there? Like, does he even care what he's doing? He's just like, he just looks like the biggest dork ever. Like, how can you get behind this guy? Like, he's just, okay, all right, whatever, you know, okay, just get you out of my face. It's just lame, you know? I mean, I think Darby Allin, Orange Cassidy was better in the segment than him. And he just stood there.
All right. So for me, I did not like the weigh-in. Yeah, I don't know why.
That was my last one. Why?
Why are we doing a weigh-in when clearly Brian Cage is, you know, all of 275 or whatever.
Why don't we have a bench pressing contest?
Darby should be... basically, what that segment told me is that Darby should be a junior heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know if that's what they were trying to get, but that's what it told me.
What this just is a clear... I mean, we all know what wrestling is, but just like if anyone came in and tuned in that just and they saw this, they're like, oh shit, the guy's 100 pounds, they're gonna kill that guy. You know, yeah. Like that, yeah. That's be it. They're not gonna watch next week because, you know, they don't know Darby Allin's the champion or hard fighting young, you know, young gun. They just, yeah, he'll kill him and that'll be it. You know, it was a waste of time and nothing came of it. We just found out that he's 100 pounds heavier,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, he can at least work Darby Allin's weight a little bit, you know, but, you know, these have to be, they like that 100 pounds, you know, and then of course Sting comes out. I love Sting, but damn, he's just so boring here.
Well, the other thing is Taz is great on the mic. He's got great delivery. You feel what he's saying. You know, he's always got a joke about Shivani. I forgot what he called Shivani.
White ass.
Oh yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. but he should be smarter, right? Like he should figure a different way in trying to do what he's trying to do, which is attack Darby. How about we do it a different way? Because three times in a row, you've tried to do it this way, or how many ever times, and it hasn't worked. Well, Let's try a different way.
Taz not booking it though. It's Tony Khan.
He's the manager. This is his crew.
No, he could suggest something. I guess.
No. I'm not saying in real life. I'm saying the character of Taz.
No, I know what you're saying, but. Yeah. Well, he should have done something different. How many times can you come out and just talk, do promo on these guys? And I know. It's like the same segment, but it's a weigh-in now. Yeah. And then that idiot, Brian Cage, he weighs in. See that, Billy Gunn? Like, what? Like, why? You're not wrestling Billy Gunn, you idiot. You're wrestling like a Darby Allin. I know it's like... just, you know, meatheads being meatheads together, right?
Yeah.
And, but like, okay.
Billy Gunn's probably breaking that, his balls saying he's got bigger arms than Kane.
Yeah, they're doing that. Do that in the, that's the back stuff. That's like, hey, dude, look at you, man. Look at Cavs. Look at my shit on that bullshit. Like, you know, they don't put it on the television show when he's trying, he should be looking menacing like he's going to rip fucking Darby Allin's head off his shoulders, right? Like, Billy Gunn, look at that. Like, freaking Brian Cage, man. I hope he has someone opening doors for him because he might just walk right through him. You know, he's just one of those guys.
Okay, so let's go to NXT because there was some fun stuff on this show. Let's save the main event for the last one because I do want to save that.
Do you have a lot of dislikes? I only have one, but do you have...
I already mentioned the booking piece that I think, and then I have one more small dislike.
Okay.
No. I have two more.
Let's start with the dislikes because okay. You know I'd like to let's switch it up a little bit here.
Okay. So my main dislike, we can talk about Cross and Priest.
That was mine.
I thought the match would have been better if it was just the explosive Lesnar Goldberg kind of match where you know they're just two killers and one killer is just gonna win. Mm-hmm. Here. It was a weird kickboxing match in the beginning, and then it was Damian Priest just selling, and then it was Cross finally winning the match. But I just thought, I was like, okay, like I get the story. I didn't like the long match because I don't think Damian Priest is a bad seller, but if you ask me, like, what is the one or two best things that he does, I would not put selling as those top two things.
He's pretty good, though.
He's good. He's fine, but to see him sell for long stretches of time, that's not what I wanted to see out of this match. I wanted to see a lot more explosion, but then that's when I came back to what we talked about when Cross came back for that one match, and I was like, this dude does not look like he's in shape. Like, and then you had mentioned, maybe you mentioned that, you know, because of the injury, he couldn't train or whatever. But then he was so one dimensional in this match. It made me wonder if he is still hurt. Like, is he even ready to be in this match? Because it was just a one dimensional match for him. He didn't really do anything.
Yeah, I thought he looked blown up to me for sure. Like he was really huffing and puffing out there. That power bomb that he gave Priest was really high angle his neck. I mean, I think that was a sign of him being blown up where, you know, he couldn't get him all the way up and, you know, she damn near didn't drop him safely. I mean, that was pretty scary. I like not like, oh my God, like I don't like in horror. Oh my God. You know, you know, his body, he's not tight. I know he just came back from an injury, so I don't know if how much lift he can do. I think he came back too soon, is what I'm thinking.
Well, why would he need to?
Well, if he wants to be back. I mean, and you know, I don't think there's any pressure from NXT to bring him back.
That's what I mean. You know, he can come back and they're immediately going to push him again.
Well, think about this. Like, he's in the WWE now. He got from day one of his you know, time in WWE's getting this really big push. He wins the championship. He gets hurt. You know, he wants to come back and, you know, be involved again. He's sitting on the sidelines was probably killing him. So he came back. To me, he just came back too soon. And I don't know how much ring time he's gotten. Like, if he's at the PC, what's he doing? I don't know. Like, because, you know, lifting weights and doing cardio on the treadmill is a lot different than cardio in the ring. So I don't know what he was doing. Like, so it just really affected the match. It probably went way too long. It went way too long. They probably could have shortened it up a lot. You know, they could have accomplished the same goal. I like that Cross listens to our podcast. And he changed his finisher up. No longer head and arm choke. Looks like it's going to be that that back. That, yeah, I love that finisher. You know, it's a great finisher. It's simple. It's vicious looking. So I'm glad. I hope he continues to go with that. Though I like the Doomsday Saito as a finish, but it's also a cool setup for that. That elbow to the back of the head. So head and arm choke. Like we said last, like his squash match he had, it was just like just didn't work. Doesn't work right now for, you know, you need something vicious. So yeah, that I like that at least.
All right. So the only other qualm I had about this show, this is not about the match, necessarily about the match, because I thought Gargano and Kushida was really fun. But what you would consider, you know, a little bit of the Gaga stuff with Austin Theory, you know, getting his head dropped into Johnny's nuts and all that stuff. And then even before that, which is the, you know, the little parade, the one car parade or whatever for them getting into the building. Like, this is not their fault because they didn't know what the hell was going on in the world today. That came off a little tone deaf, but I'm not going to blame them for it becoming a little tone deaf. But the I thought the Austin Theory stuff was a little bit overkill, and you were more offended by that stuff a couple weeks ago than I was even. And then when I watched it just yesterday, I was like, I didn't feel that was the right tone, because coming out of that match, I'm just like, all right, book it tomorrow. Kushida, Johnny Gargano, go 20 minutes. I can't wait.
Yeah. I had this on my likes. Not the match. Like, the match was fine. I just didn't think they needed a match. But I mean, I didn't really put two and two together with, you know, what was happening in the real world and their entrance into the building. I thought it was very interesting, and at least for a picture-in-picture segment, because I fast-forwarded, but at the same time, you see in that little box, like the cop cars and them on their, you know, them sticking out on they're sitting on the back seat, you know, him and Gargano and Candace. And yet
was DDP Austin, driving?
Austin's driving.
Oh, no, I thought it was DDP's pink Cadillac.
Oh, yeah.
What was that, WrestleMania 6?
What I liked about it was I thought this was a little bit of an improvement on... They didn't feel like geeks here. They really felt like arrogant pricks, which that they need to be, right? I actually like the missile to the nuts on Austin Theory. I thought she was gonna shoot the picture down, right? That's what I thought first. Like, man, they could hit that. That'd be pretty cool. I don't mind the nut job. And I'll tell you what. I'll give Austin Theory credit. I was keeping an eye on the corner of this match. That dude knows the stance. He's always been kicked in the balls many times because he knows how to sell this. He's stretching it out. He's not just sitting there. All of a sudden, he's fine. He's clapping for Gargano. Like he's.
So it wasn't that part that I didn't like. It was when he got the drop toe hold into the corner. Well,
because he just had his balls hurt. You know, that was Gaga. But to me, they didn't need the match. Yeah. To me, I thought Shotzi could have came out and you know she could have got like. You know, got the better hand on Indy and also Candace. But then, like, I know they don't like male on female physical violence or you know, physicality. But what if Gargano just grabs her, you know, and holds her for Candace to get a shot in? And then here comes Kushida. And then he's kind of clears house on everyone. And now it's like there's a standoff and like, hey, next week there's a really cool mixed tag match, you know, set up for something next week. I know there's a couple tag matches next week with the Dusty Classic, but you know, this is a kind of different thing. It's a tag match, yes, but it's a mixed tag, so it's, you know, a little different for that show. I know they're filling time, and you know, I don't know what they could have done to, you know, to fill that match time. But, you know, I thought they could have held off instead of just right into the match. I'm always thinking like, okay, how can one lead to another week to another, you know what I mean? That's how my mind works. But that's what I was thinking. But I like,
did you have another negative?
Oh no, I was done. I only had that one. I was really disappointed in that Priest and Cross match, and I'm gonna put that on Cross.
All right. So Regal announced the Dusty Classic for the women as well.
Interesting. Yeah.
Do you know if they're gonna also have WWE tag teams in there, like WWE main roster tag teams?
I don't think it's gonna be 16 teams. I think it might be 8.
I'm trying to think of how many NXT tag teams you could actually have that are interesting enough to create a tournament.
Dakota and Raquel.
Yeah.
Shotzi and, I think Shotzi might be Theo. I can see them doing that because, you know, they're really high on Shotzi.
What happened to Ember Moon?
I don't know. Maybe she's nicked up or something. I don't know. Man, I don't know what's going on with her. But Ember and Shotzi could be a team, or Ember and Io could be a team. Yeah, you're right. Like, what? Indy and Candice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a team. I think it's going to be 8 teams. Yeah, I could see, like, some main roster. Maybe one team from Raw, one team from SmackDown.
That would be cool.
Kate and Catanzaro and Kaden Carter, right?
That one's going to be rough.
Well, I know, but they're just there to feed. I mean, they should be first round, you know, losers, unless they can pull off some kind of upset or something. Mercedes Martinez seems like to be on her. She's on her own, unless the Robert Stone brand comes back.
Aaliyah or Tony Storm or something.
Tony seems like she would be with. Mercedes Martinez. That makes sense because Raquel's going to be with Dakota. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So they have some teams there. Like I said, I think it's going to be 8. I'm happy that the Dusty Classic 16 teams this year instead of 8. That was surprising to me. So I have a feeling a couple. Will it be a main roster team in there? You think or a Dusty Classic?
I haven't looked at any of the, because they did book a couple matches already, right?
They have Breezango and Undisputed Era, and they have Ever Rise and the Grizzly Young Veterans, which I already knew that match was going to be one of them in the Dusty Classic, because just from the booking, the Era and Breezango match is surprising because they're both baby faces technically, so that's interesting. Should be good. Yeah, looking forward to this tournament. I mean, I like tag matches, and they have a good team, so I like that Gargano and Theory's in it, because I bet you Kushida could, maybe Kushida and Leon Ruff or something like that, you know what I mean, or something. Kushida and someone, and they can hook up in the tournament somehow, him and Gargano. I have a feeling that, you remember during the El Fantasmo Grand Metalik match where he came off, Grand Metalik came off and dived on Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza?
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that Joaquin Wilde is really selling his knee pretty hard?
Mm-mm.
My guess, I mean, he came in the ring and they did like the arm celebration and thing, so he wasn't really... He sold a little bit, but it wasn't as big as when he's on the floor. And that could have been just him being, this is why I'm out of the match and not interfering for near falls or whatever. But I have a feeling that he'll be out of the match. And Santos Escobar will be in it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling they'll work Kurt Stallion and Austin Gray, right? That's the guy's name. And I think Kurt Stallion beats Santos Escobar in that match, and that sets up a title match there. That's my prediction, because I think Kurt Stallion, like, I don't know, I think he won some kind of match on 205, and they kept talking about Kurt Stallion has a title shot, and they kind of dropped it for some reason. I'm not sure why, but then that's what I was wondering, like, oh, I thought this Kurt Stallion guy was going to show up on NXT. Then he never did. He just kind of, they kind of just stopped talking about it. And then Grand Metal League showed up, and so now they have this... they'll have this. I think it's going to happen. And I think, Grand Metalik and Lince Dorado probably be in it as a tag team. So I guess that's your main roster team. But I like the idea of Austin Theory and Gargano's team in there. I like that. I like some major teams in there. So that's good.
All right. So let's talk about our likes. And I'll start. Like I said, I want to save the main event for last. So I want to talk about. The Ripley and Gonzalez match. This match was pretty scary in some instances too. You know, these women are really strong. They're really athletic, and they, I don't know, this is probably a bad way to say it, but they sort of wrestle like dudes, like big dudes.
That's a compliment.
I know, it's a compliment for them, but to the audience that it may not be, they may not understand that that's a compliment to them. So I just wanted to explain it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I think I don't like to see Rhea lose so much. We've talked about this over and over this whole last year about she's losing too much. But this match was really good. These women are fantastic. Raquel has grown so much, and this is the perfect feud for her because it's just two really strong women fighting, and she's really good at the, you know, I'm sure if you had her in a technical match against, you know, Io or something, you could probably find some holes, but in this kind of match,
yeah, she wouldn't work that technical style. She'd be doing the power versus.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But in this kind of match, she's amazing. Rhea's amazing. Can we stop using handcuffs? I know the whole spot was for her to be strong and rip the handcuffs out of the thing. I'm just like, how do people find handcuffs? Like I've never seen a pair of handcuffs just available anywhere. Like, well, unless it's in the secret box
Can we stop using kendo sticks, dude?
That's another one.
And I hate when they pull out the kendo stick. It's always, that's the one thing I hate about this match is a kendo stick. You know, I hate that about every quote-unquote hardcore match or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can complain about really is just having Rhea lose again. I just don't like to see it so often. It's becoming a little bit more casual than I'd like for it to happen.
Beat her last show, so that's why I had a feeling when we talked about last week that Raquel was going to win this one, because she won a War Games match, and I think she beat Io in that one, right? Yeah, she beat Io. So she has a title shot coming. So it just makes sense. And I think the last man standing finish worked. I don't think it was necessarily done to protect Rhea by not getting pinned. I think it was just done because the feud was, it just kind of built to that. They needed some kind of stipulation. I like the last man. It gives them a reason to go all over the building, which I thought was really creative what they did. All the areas of the building they used. Dakota Kai's appearance was great.
They stuck her in the locker or whatever.
She's so great. She is so good. And even that spot where, yeah, Rhea throws her in the locker. Holy cow, you know. Like, that was great. Like, that's good comedy. Like, that's good comedy in wrestling. And what I love about this match is just the intensity was there. Like, you felt these women didn't like each other. I'm not saying it's this Ric Flair and Terry Funk I quit, but damn, I was believing that these girls hate each other. And, you know, Rhea had some awesome moments. Raquel had some great moments. I thought the finish was well done, you know, through the stage deal. You know, once Rhea hit that swanton off the top to the table, I'm like, oh shit, what are they going to do for a finish? You know, because
the suck it swanton?
Yeah. I was like, what are they going to do for, like, what's the big finale, you know? Like, well, how can Raquel, like, what's the big spot? And, you know, going through a stage, the little special effect worked really well. And, you know, I thought they did a great job. And everyone did a great job with the match. It was, to me, it's like an early match of the year contender. It should be considered, at least.
All right. What else was on your likes list before we get to the main event?
We talked about the Way celebration. So other than that, I enjoyed the main event. I liked the story there. And like I said, I felt that Finn was going to win this one. You know, match two. There's a story down the line for O'Reilly to beat Balor. Maybe not for the title. Maybe he gets the title somehow, and maybe he's defending against Balor, and you know he might win that one. He should win that one. But I liked it. It's just, you know, slow paced, built well. I love the story of, you know, Balor's just, you know, they respect each other, but Balor's also pissed about the broken jaw, so now he's going to return the favor, and I thought it was really well done. It was great.
The submission was extremely well done. I didn't see the tap. Did you see the tap?
Yes, it was on the right arm.
Yeah, it was on the right side. And I guess I was looking so intently at I thought he was going to like verbally tap, so I'm like looking at his face. But then he can't like you would have to hear it. You wouldn't be able to see it because his lips couldn't move. And then when they stopped the match, I was like, "Oh, I missed the tap. What happened?"
I wonder if it would have been better if he would just passed out.
Yeah.
You know, like he didn't tap, but he passed out. I don't know. I don't know. I have to talk to you know, a few different people about that. What the theory is, what's better. Mm-hmm. I kind of like the passing out. I think it like shows that, you know, he didn't want to give up, and but you know, he's just dead, right? He's locked in that hole. There's nowhere to go. And it's so small but so important. Like the first few minutes of that match, They're so good at working holes. Everything meant something. They don't like just do it, and it's not throwaway. Nothing was thrown away in this match. It was really well done. So there's a point where Balor goes for the abdominal stretch. Well, it's just to me, I thought he was just going for the abdominal stretch, but now I've realized he's going to set up this finisher, right? Mm-hmm. But he doesn't want O'Reilly to struggle out and get out of this one. He wants so he. Booked it perfectly. He called it perfectly. Reverse it quickly, mm-hmm. right? So when he does get it later in the finish match, like oh shit, you know. So it was a small thing that I really liked. Like you know, he didn't like let a guy get in a hold and he just gets out of it because he's gonna get. That's gonna happen during the finish. Like he's still fresh. He should be quick to get out of it, and because he knows like, hey, he's in danger, so he's got to get reversed out fast. That's just a really smart match. Those guys are so damn great, you mm-hmm. know. So I mean, Rhea Ripley Gonzalez, my favorite match of the night,
yeah,
for both shows. You know, second was probably the Balor O'Reilly, and you know, I thought that was good. And then the Balor and I mean Omega and Phoenix was really good. So it was a good night of action and wrestling.
And you got to see Snoop Doggy Dog come off the top rope.
Oh yeah, we forgot to talk about that. Yeah. Well, it wasn't supposed to be graceful, right?
No, it wasn't, because it's not supposed to be. Because then you'd be like, oh, anybody could do this.
I wish they would have had some heel. Like him working a heel would have been better. Like so Seidel was, just, you know, I don't know why we specifically wanted to work Seidel for.
Yeah, I don't know the story about that either. I'm sure.
So then you had to like force. You had to force Serpentor and Dr. Luther who did something. And still tripped, and like Dr. Luther. Oh, God bless Dr. Luther. I shouldn't really rag on him because he's getting paid to do shit. So like God bless him.
I think the thing that, you know, when people are like, oh, they're setting back the wrestling industry when the celebrity can do it, it's like, no, because
he didn't do it well.
But Cody and Seidel were holding the guy down. They weren't, you know, it's not like Snoop Dogg, you know, hulked up and started beating on this dude. Like, They were holding this poor guy down so he could.
Yeah, and Serpentor is a perfect guy to take that, you know, because no one cares about him, so it's fine. You know, it's not about him; it's about, you know, Snoop Dogg, and he got his moment. And I just wish he wouldn't have. Did someone tell him he had to be on the stage the whole time?
I don't know. Like, they did that in the Hager match too. They're just all just hanging out there.
I guess Jake sometimes hangs out there too, but to me, it's just so damn distracting.
I don't know. Like, are we supposed to? What are we supposed to think there? Because usually managers or seconds, they're ringside. But is that supposed to mean like, oh, no, the referee doesn't want them at ringside because there's too much, you know, posse stuff going on or team stuff going on? I don't know. I don't understand. That has never been explained to me.
I mean, the biggest star in that match was Snoop Dogg. So you're gravitating to see what Snoop Dogg doing. What's his? You're trying to see what he's doing the whole time instead of the actual match. Kind of took away from the viewing of the Rhodes and Cody Rhodes and Seidel match for me. I mean, he's kind of distracting. I would have had him.
It was like Tyson. Remember the Tyson thing?
Yeah. Maybe because they think the hard cam's there, but they have multiple cameras. This is not Memphis, you know, where they had the hard cam at Mid-South Coliseum. They could just, you know, they have a four camera shoot there, I think. You know, they can have him at ringside to show him his reactions. You know, he just put and he's doing the Arn Anderson thing with the plays, right? And where's Arn?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's let Snoop Dogg have the moment and go ahead, man. It's your brother.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Arn was like, it's Seidel. You don't need me.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we're doing something with Serpentor. What the hell? Yeah, that's cool.
All right. So that's it from here. We will be back next week to talk about the second night of New Year's Smash. Did WWE, the Dusty Rhodes stuff they mentioned, was there anything else that they mentioned for next week's show for NXT?
Not next week, but they announced they kind of messed my Valentine's Day up.
Oh, yeah, because of TakeOver.
Yeah, what? Dude, bro, I'm going to get heat, man. I'm going to watch that on Monday, I guess. Yeah, so I was like, oh, no. That was my reaction to that whole deal. But
I know. I wish they would have called it a Valentine's Day Massacre again, but massacre is not a really good word to use.
Yeah, not now. Yeah.
I'm with you. This is going to be one of those where hanging out with the wife pretty much all day and she gets tired at 9:30 and then I try to watch the whole show after she goes to bed.
That's my plan. Maybe I'm going to do the big celebration on Saturday night. Night, you know, and then she'll be in a glow and it's like, yeah, I'm going to watch wrestling. Oh yeah, go ahead. Usually sometimes that's it. What I do.
That's the strategy. Oh man, that's
a strategy. We gotta end on a positive. We gotta end on a fun note. So I wanted to.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, we'll be back next week. Like I said, keep your eyes glued to our Twitter feed, my Twitter feed, Fight Game Media Twitter feed. We're gonna do some giveaways, and I'm looking for more things to do. We gave away the Voices of Wrestling. I gave away one each of Meltzer's, Big Dave Meltzer's Kindle books. I'm just trying to create some fun out of this, and hopefully, you know, if you're following us, you can either get a free month to the network, or maybe get a shirt from Jim Valley. But there's gonna be other stuff. There's gonna be other things involved. I know our buddy JD Oliva, who's on our network. I want to do some stuff where, you know, people who are interested in his writing, because that's what he does mostly, is he's an author, and I want to give away some of his books, and we'll have him on a show as well to talk a little bit about the outside of his wrestling stuff, as he's an author. So I want to give away some of his stuff. So we'll be doing tons of that stuff this year, trying to find some cool things that people are interested in, and we'll do that. So for John, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.